Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Pedagogy Matters podcast. The purpose of the podcast is to bring the forward some key topics of conversation in relation to learning and teaching, to discuss, to break down aspects of practice and provide snippets, advice and guidance as to how to integrate these into our daily practice. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Alan Glenn from Edinburgh College. We'll be discussing project-based learning. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Johnny. I'm well, thanks. Thanks very much for asking me to come and be on the podcast. It's a great pleasure.
No, fantastic. Great to have you. So obviously I know we've talked quite a bit over the last 6 months or so. You've delivered a session for us at Expo. And really on the back of that interest, we're keen to kind of discuss and explore a little bit more about some of the initiatives that you've done and really explore those a bit further.
Sure.
So let's get straight into it. So project-based learning, I guess in your world, are you okay to kind of share what you did, what that means to you and kind of where that came from?
Yeah, I mean, I think how it came about, I mean, to give a little bit of a kind of backstory, I have been at Edinburgh College about 15 years. I started as the saxophone teacher in the music department. And then obviously as the years developed or as the years went on, my manager realised I had other skills and other abilities. So got me into the classroom, doing a bit of classroom teaching. About 5 years ago, I was made a curriculum leader, but the curriculum leader of sound production and music business, which is at a whole other campus, moved down, and then I'm now the curriculum team manager for that team. And it came about from that initial move from the music department to the sound production department, because you were coming into a team with an established method, assessment kind of practice. And you were the outsider, so you could come at it from quite a dispassionate kind of way and have a look at things and just, you know, take the good and the bad and work with the, you know, it's this usual thing, work with the good and like change up the bad things. And the one thing I noticed was just the amount of duplication of assessment and the amount of tiny little assessments, which just overwhelmed like the learners, like overwhelmed the you know, and I think that that's something that, in all honesty, I mean, the listeners will maybe be thinking the same thing. It's getting worse. It's easier to overwhelm learners now, especially off the back of COVID.
No, I think that's really interesting. And the kind of point you mentioned there was you could see that kind of objectively, I guess, kind of coming in fresh into a team. And you're right, and kind of reflect on my own practice, we always did what we always did. We always taught the same units in the same order because that was so-and-so's unit, or they'd like to teach that first. And often there was a purpose to that sequencing, but still those assessments, you're right, they became the focal point. And in some cases, there was kind of that fear of change.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit more what you did. So you can identify the challenge there, or the problem is the volume of assessment, and it's too much, and some are micro-assessments. So what did you do?
So this kind of came about twofold as well, because the HND in sound production was changing frameworks. The SQA had updated it, so things needed to change anyway, which was quite nice because you took the first hurdle, potential hurdle, out of the equation, and that you just said, like, people, some people just don't like change. But this was like forced that we were going to have to change. It was new units, it was new learning outcomes, so let's do it. So again, I wanted the staff to take complete ownership of assessments of units. Well, not even units, because we've talked about this before, I don't really think in terms of units. I think if you do think in terms of units, it's fine. To me, it's part of the problem. So what I did was I took a load of index cards and I wrote the learning outcomes from the SQA's unit descriptors on one side, and I wrote the units that they were from on the other side. And then basically I asked the staff, without any real prep, so don't look at unit specs, don't look at learning outcomes, don't look at anything for about 2 weeks beforehand, arrange those cards into a set number of piles. So I think it was about five of outcomes that you think work or that you think will match up. Don't turn them over, don't look at the units, just to see it. And the reason that I went for five is because there was actually more units than five units. So you're instantly bringing, by putting in that that restriction, you're instantly bringing down the assessment burden. So that got a really kind of, it got them really thinking. And what was quite nice was, I've said this, I've said this to a few teams when I've kind of chatted about this, is I'd done it the night before. I was in the pub just having, like, it was one of those things, get out of the flat, get out of, you know, go to the pub and just have a sit. And I'm sad that way. I took these cards with me and I sat and I just did it myself. And the team came up with a completely different set of five than I did.
Yeah.
Which was great because it wasn't me trying to force my will on the team. It was them taking total ownership of this is the course, this is the outcomes. How are we going to put them into projects that we think work?
And that's a really interesting bit. And you kind of touched upon kind of earlier within that description around the kind of move away from units to a degree there as well. I know, and we've talked in the past, it's kind of more around kind of looking more holistic at the program in terms of whether you use skills, knowledge, and behaviors, or different terminology, whatever you use, in terms of what is it students actually need to be able to do? What do they need to be able to know? And sometimes the units, we all know why they're written in the way that units are. But yeah, I agree, it's kind of really important for colleagues to, yeah, to have that time and flexibility to reflect. And as you just said there, they came up with a different set of five than you did. And that's fine because it's all around kind of perspective around what skills, knowledge, behaviors, or whatever language people choose to use to focus around. So you've done that. So you've looked at, I think you said there's 25 learning outcomes. You've kind of put them into five piles. Then what happened?
Really, it's then it was a continual discussion amongst the staff. The usual thing, or the thing can be, is that you just then send each staff member away to do their own thing, create their own assessments. But if you do that, I mean, again, this, all that I'm given is my opinion on what I think works and what doesn't. You know, some people will probably massively disagree with me, and others might be thinking, you know, it's something worth trying. But if you let the staff just go away and do their own thing, you might as well have just given them the units in the first place, I think. This was about how can each assessment feed into the other assessment. So it's not just project-based learning, it's like integrated project-based learning, if you want to give it a name. So, for example, there was a project which was based on post-production for video. So it's the idea of creating sound effects or dialogue or anything like that for a piece of video. It's one of the big trends in the industry, and it's one of the biggest employers in the industry at the moment. Well, instead of getting them to record it separately, there's also a recording project. So why can't they record the stuff for that project in the other assessment? Absolutely. And then use it in the next one? And again, it's what you notice when you do it like this as well, you can actually get the assessments done fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Like, you're not taking... I have this big thing as well. I was saying, we give the academic teams 36 teaching weeks. But they take that, sometimes they take that really seriously. It's like, right, I've got 36 weeks to teach. So they'll go to the absolute bitter end of, and then they'll give the assessment. I just wanted to get the learners, like we all wanted to get the learners with the basic understanding, the basic ability to do the work, to record, to edit, to, you know, whatever the outcomes were. And then once they had the confidence that they've passed their assessment, so they're demonstrating a basic knowledge and understanding,
yeah,
it was then just more events, more things of the same, more real world stuff that we could then, so for recording, a lot of our stuff, we would bring bands in, or we would go out into the kind of local community, go out into schools, and we take the students, take a load of equipment, and we would record it. They're not, that's not assessed, but they were ending up putting all this stuff in their graded units as well, so it ended up becoming assessed.
Yeah.
And the confidence that you got from the learners when they started seeing them passing their course early on gave them that kind of drive and determination to kind of keep going, as opposed to just a lot of learning and then an assessment, which harks back to the old school exams.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And we always talk about kind of, we want learners to own their learning and to kind of lead their learning. And you kind of, you touched upon there in terms of the real world learning. That's the way kind of our program should be, where we can make them, especially for vocational programs, is exposure to real world where we can do. And that's a holy grail for lots of people. The difficulty is of, well, how do I do it? How do I fit that into my timetable? There's so many things you've touched upon there in terms of the 36-week duration. Well,
yeah.
One, yeah, but you don't have to teach for all 36 weeks. It's around the curation and development skills. Another bit to kind of consider is there's a lot of... a lot of conversation in the education world now about differentiation is a no-no. It should be about adaptive teaching, which kind of really is kind of what you've just alluded to there. Everyone works at their own pace. And if they're going through and developing their skills, and if they're ready for the assessment, they're ready for the assessment. And the final bit, the most important bit for me, is just because Unit 1 says record, develop skill, and Unit 2 then says record, you shouldn't do in that order. Put them together. You're absolutely right. You know, it's more holistic. It's better for students. It's real world. When they're out doing whatever job, they'll put those together. There's no point in segmenting that too much and keeping it totally separate is different things. It's bringing that together and students then developing skills. And I know you mentioned, I think when I talked previously, actually some of the projects then that you made were linked with industry, and they were for industry, and some people kind of got selected. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, we've done, we have a lot of kind of good industry partners, and, you know, they were using their projects as almost like showreels or interview prep or whatever, so that they could get selected for external projects by the industry partners, which is something that we cannot simulate in college, or no one can simulate in college. Yeah. The big thing about the real world situation that I always talk about, and especially, I mean, coming from any industry, but particularly creative industries and music and sound production, is you're going to make mistakes. There's going to be problems. There's going to be issues, like technological issues. Things aren't going to work. How are you going to deal with it? Because I hate to break it to you, the concert starts at 7:30. You know, it's like we need to have a solution by this time. And we can't get it when we do like simulated assessments within a department. And I don't think you should necessarily assess learners on these kind of things, because I think it will then just, if something goes wrong, if it's a real world kind of thing and something goes wrong, they could just completely fall apart. But because they've passed and I use that word kind of in quotations, they've passed an assessment, they have that confidence to then go, oh, I can do this. And they just take a moment, they think, and then they work through the problem, which, I mean, let's face it, I think for what we're producing in FE, problem solving is probably the biggest skill that actually needs to be developed. Is you're not going to get it right first time. Yep. No one ever gets it right first time. So how do we make it? How do you fix it? Or how do you make it better? Or how do you improve on it?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because that's what they need in industry. And often that's the hardest thing to teach in the college environment, unless it, especially in a simulated environment, because yeah, it's quite limited, the ability to do that. But no, I think it's really interesting. So I guess just to clarify in simpler terms, you took what was 25 learning outcomes, which were typically assessed individually. You grouped those together into, did you say 5 or 6 different projects?
About,
is that
it's
right?
It's like 5 projects plus the graded units, so 6 in total.
Yeah, so 5 projects plus the graded unit. And those projects were an amalgamation of learning outcomes from different units that fit together naturally, that had a real life context. So people are saying, yeah, that works for you in sound production. Now, I'm going to share an example here from a different subject area in terms of my background in sport. And again, in my old world, we taught 18 units over 2 years, 9 year 1, 9 year 2, and people always taught them in the same order. Or actually, there was, for example, there were 2 fitness units, which were very similar, but they were taught separate. There was an anatomy unit, which was taught separate. There was a nutrition unit, which was taught separate. So there's 5, I think. Definitely 4. So it was 2 anatomy. So there was 5 units. They were big units, but again, we did exactly the same thing. We spent, it took a good afternoon for the team to sit down and think, right, well, what fits where? How do we do that first, second, and third? And the end output was those 5 units were effectively put together into 1 bigger unit, into then 3 big assessments. And for context, in those 5 units originally, there used to be 3 assessments per unit, so a total of 15 assessments. And they were condensed into 3 big assessments, which were project-based, and they worked with people from outside of their classroom and took them through the learner journey. And the key bit there was that was related then to them working in industry as a personal trainer, as a fitness instructor. And that's ultimately, for me, why it's important, because we're trying to prepare learners for their next steps, whether that be further study or whether that be employment. And if it's employment, they've got to be ready to do that. So what you've just shared there and kind of the examples that I've worked with in the past, it helps students really do that. Yes, it takes time. Yes, it's hard. Yes, it's a change. But actually, the end output and the impact is better. So in your world, what was the impact of doing this?
I mean, the impact, I mean, it's the dreaded, like, key performance indicators comes into it as well. But it always does. You know, we're always marked against that. And they were okay when I started. And again, I'm not taking any sort of kind of credit for the kind of success of this. But they improved quite dramatically over, you know, when we introduced this more project-based learning. I did it, and the other thing I should say is I only did it on the HND. I wanted to do like a proof of concept.
Yep.
I think whilst it's a, you know, whilst it's a great idea, probably one of the worst thing anybody that does curriculum lead or curriculum development does is basically take the entire curriculum across all your courses and rip it up and start again, because it is a recipe for disaster, because we might have got it wrong. You know, it might not have worked. Thankfully it did, and we've rolled that out across our other kind of courses as well, because it shows that it works. But something that I was recently saying at Dumfries and Galloway College, when I was down helping out with a kind of development day, was we're just about to start it again. We're just about ready to do this again, because this was about 5 years ago. This was pre-COVID that we had done this, and the learners have changed. The type of learner has changed, and the industry's also developed. As much as it's sound production, but sound production is a technology-based industry, and technology-based industries move at light speed. So we're wanting to adapt. So we're basically going to do the same thing again. The first one will be to have a good hard look at the optional units. Like, are we picking the right optional units? Is there ones that we could swap out? Is there ones that, you know, it works, it doesn't? I mean, in an ideal world, I wouldn't have units at all, and I would just have the list of outcomes. I'd have mandatory outcomes and optional outcomes, and just take the units away and be like, you really want to give learners the ownership of their own learning? Is give them the outcomes and tell them, right, how do you want to be assessed?
Yeah. Oh, that's a big step, but no, I totally understand the concept with that, and I'm keen just to kind of go back to you. Kind of, I'm going to say you glossed over them because you weren't keen to take too much credit, but I'm right in thinking that the introduction of the project did help with some of those PIs to improve in terms of
It did. I mean, we went from probably the low 60% for complete success to, I think it was the high 80s, you know, into 90 at some points. And what we also noticed was withdrawals were down, and the complete with partial success number, which I know we all hate, you know, the idea that a learner gets to the end of the year, but then doesn't get the qualification, that was sitting at near zero.
And I know it's difficult because, as always, when I look at data can tell you anything you want it to tell you. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's different students every year, there's different staff, there's different permutations, there's different, you know, so there's lots of different factors. But do you think some of those improvements or all those improvements were because students felt maybe happier in the course or more aware? There was maybe less of a workload in terms of assessment burden. Do you think, was it a combination of the above?
I think it's a combination of the above. I certainly think that the reduction of the assessment burden, because it's an interesting one, I should have said this earlier, by doing a project-based assessment, by reducing the number of assessments and going project, you're not making anything easier. Like, you're not stripping it back to it being just a really, really simple thing. If anything, you're making very big projects.
Yeah.
But to a learner, I think 5 is always less than 25. It doesn't matter if the 5 that we're talking about is really massive projects and the 25 are really easy or simple. It's 5 is less than 25. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, they can really get their teeth into it because they have a bit of time to actually develop, to make mistakes, to get feedback, to get the reviewed by their peers and let their classmates hear things, and then work on it over, could be a few weeks, could be a couple of months, rather than like almost a rote learning. I have an assessment next week. This is the stuff I have to learn for it and demonstrate it. I have another one the week after. This is the stuff I need to. And then you could do another assessment. You could do one at the very end saying, right, let's go over everything. And they've forgotten it all.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. The whole less is more analogy. But yeah, you're right. Yes, they are bigger. They are more substantive assessments, but they work on them over a significant period of time. They're more invested in it, as opposed to the feeling of, well, which assignment is it? You know, whereas actually if it's 5 projects, you know, there's all those negativities. Now, as always, whenever we talk about topics like this, we touch upon the start in terms of something that's hard for people to change. It's hard for them to kind of think differently. Some of the natural questions that came through when we discussed this a little bit at Expo were some of the operational questions.
Yeah.
You know, what about the award organization? Or what about the EV? Or no, I can't do that. What did your quality team say? What about IV and all those things? I guess So let's start with that. Let's start with the EV and kind of war and organisation. What were their views when you did this?
Well, the EV was very positive when we showed them. I mean, the reason being, and I'll tie the kind of quality assurance element into it from our side as well, is as long as you map all the outcomes to where they're being assessed in what project, that's kind of it. I mean, I'm not trying to trivialize a quality assurance project or process, but essentially, so long as you can say, well, this is demonstrated here and here is the evidence that demonstrates that, it's kind of done. And it actually, you know, to be fair, the EV did say that it made a bit more sense, and they could see that the substantive nature of the work was a better quality because these learning outcomes just fitted well together. So that takes, like, from an EV standpoint, so long as it's mapped well, I think you're fine. And that's true of the quality assurance within the college. The quality department for us were excellent. They gave us a bit of help when it came to the mapping of it. And then it's also been reciprocal, because I've also helped other teams within the college map their courses, you know, to it as well. So it's this reciprocal kind of arrangement that we have. Where it can get difficult sometimes is part-time staff members. If you've got any part-time staff members, they can sometimes feel a little bit out of the loop when it comes to the curriculum development, because obviously they're not in all the time. I think it does come to how you timetable your curriculum development, and in that instead of maybe doing it over, say, doing this exercise where you would take the cards, you would put them into five projects, and you would start the project, you start writing the projects or start the discussion about what the project should be. You might be lucky and work with a lot of full-timers. I am quite lucky and do work with mostly full-time staff members. If you're working with a lot of part-time, I would suggest that you do your curriculum development on the days where most of the team are in. It will take longer, obviously, because you're maybe talking about every week rather than a couple of days. But in order for the entire team to take ownership and not have something that's left out and the kind of outlying, oh, I don't know what's happening, that's difficult, or that can really help that. And then the other one is timetables.
Come to timetables as well, yeah, because naturally a lot of people say, well, how do you timetable that unit? So how did you get over that? How did you deal with that challenge?
So we're, again, if it's for the listeners to kind of go away and have a discussion with their quality department or their systems people, what we did was we actually have a thing at Edinburgh College called EC units, and they are just like units. They're units created by us, and they can be used for like a number of different reasons. Sometimes it's to give, it's to aid with timetabling, essentially. And what I did was, instead of having the actual SQA units, I asked for these EC units to be created for like project one, project two, project whatever. And that's what got timetabled. So that's what the staff would see on their timetables, is instead of these individual units, and they would know that in that time, these were the outcomes that they had to, the skills that they had to deliver and the outcomes that they were assessing. And then really it came just at the end of the year when you're doing the assessment, like resulting registers for SQA, that you would then give the staff the actual unit codes to say, right, that's what they've passed, that's what they've gone through. And we'd do that in the assessment, in the progression boards and the assessment boards.
Yeah.
And so there are definitely ways to do it.
That's a key I was going to come to, yes. Yeah. So there's always ways and means, and it's not about circumventing things. It's just about kind of finding what works in your organisation. But the key bit, really, that I think kind of people consider as if they're going through this process is, one, you've mentioned there, get all of the team together and spend a bit of time doing it. I totally agree. The second point is that mapping exercise is essential. You get that mapping document right, that'll be everywhere. That'll be part of your scheme of learning. That'll be part of any work for EV, part of any Moodle or VLE or wherever. Make it explicitly clear where all of the evidence for each of the units can be found. You know, so I totally agree with that. That's essential. And I think the other bit that I guess I'm keen to say, that a bit of work that we're involved with at the minute, and you're involved with this with Joe down at Dumfries and Galloway, is this mindset can then be applied then to the rest of the program. And what I mean by that is, if when we look at delivering a course, we move away to a degree from units and assessments and think, right, what's the end product that students need to have? What do they need to be able to do? What do they need to know? Use that as a starting point, build your curriculum from there. sequence it from there, and then overlay these assessments in whatever format, project based or so on, because then it makes it a lot clearer for students as to their learning journey, but also it gives us more flexibility to think, well, what do our programs need to do? And you know, that ethos, for some it may just be a subtle shift, but for others it's quite a radical difference to move away from unit 1, unit 2, unit 3, unit 4. In essence, the learning is still the same, but it's kind of sequenced more appropriately to help students develop their skills and take ownership over their skills and knowledge. So yeah, I think it's a really, really interesting point. And the final bit you mentioned, sorry, I can see you itching to come in, is around that. For me, I had a conversation yesterday with some learning and teaching colleagues around, right, what's being taught face-to-face, what's being taught online? And the notional figure at this point in time from the individuals in that room were about 10%. But whenever the conversation was, well, what's being taught online, it was a bit unclear. Staff didn't quite know what part of their program to teach online. So therefore, spending this bit of time reflecting on the curriculum design as a whole, what do students need to develop? You can then look at, well, which medium is better to allow students that time or that space to develop these skills and knowledge and behaviours? Sorry, that's what I was kind of keen to say. Go on, Alan.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, we don't have any online teaching now. After like post-COVID or post-restrictions, we are now back pretty much full-time. But it's because our course needs that. We need to be on campus. That's not to say, though, that we've kind of let resources or the virtual learning environment kind of slip because we're back on campus. You know, we believe a lot in a lot of asynchronous learning, that, you know, we need students or we need learners to review things before they come in, which again, I think it treats them more like adults as well. And I think sometimes that you get a lot of learners that do flourish with that they, yeah, they come from school. And this is nothing about school. It's the attitude of they do something, there's not a lot of pre-work. It's like you do the work and then you do the homework. Yeah. Whereas for us, we're almost the other way around in that we have very little in the way of homework, but we have a lot of, right, you need to look at this before class because I'm going to come in at the point which that video stops.
I think that's really interesting because for me, I totally agree with you. And again, going back to my example of anatomy and physiology and sport, is that I spent a lot of time teaching muscles and bones. But actually, over the last couple of years, I've developed a lot of materials about muscles and bones. So my discussion with colleagues now is, as former colleagues kind of work in the English sector as well as colleagues in Scotland, is actually, why don't you encourage learners to watch those materials at home? And then that face-to-face time you have with students is not reduced, but it's a greater richness of the face-to-face time for greater interactions, for depth of knowledge, depth of understanding, and so on and so forth. So that's how we can use technology to really enhance the curriculum offer. So now I think that's really, really interesting point you put there, because again, when speaking to colleagues I used to work with, the common view, I guess, is to, well, actually, let's just put that afternoon online. That's an easy unit. And that's not about that. It's about kind of looking at the program more holistically. Where can you use the online learning concept or part of a program to enhance that learning experience?
Absolutely. I mean, I almost think it's a misconception of what online learning is, because I think, again, and it might be a layover from lockdowns and pandemic and whatever, but it's more the idea that online learning to me isn't a lecturer sitting at home in their home studio or their home whatever delivering a class to a group of students that are watching it online. That to me isn't online learning. Online learning is, you know, asynchronous. So if it's videos, if it's quizzes, we have a lot of kind of interactive user guides that we kind of put together as well, because again, the nice thing for us is that we encourage our students to use our facilities outside of ours. So if they want to work on their own recording projects, their own stuff outside, or graded unit or coursework, fine. But obviously, staff aren't there. Now, if we don't have a lot of online resources and materials, if something goes wrong and the student can't problem solve it, session's wasted.
Absolutely.
Whereas if we have that material and they know that they've got that knowledge bank of a VLE, then they can go on and it's like, we've got like common problems, common faults. Or if they just need to refresh their memory, they can review it and then get, all right, okay, that's where my mistake was, or that's fixed it. And it's also, it's quite nice in class as well, because I've noticed it myself that when I've, obviously I teach less now being a team manager, but when I was teaching a bit more and you had all these banks of materials, what you'd notice is you deliver a class, you deliver a new concept and you would let the learners go and try it. And you go around and you would see maybe half a dozen of your class looking back on old videos because they'd forgotten how to do something. And they were all at different points and they were all looking at different things. And it meant that you weren't doing that thing of they put the hand up, Alan, I need a hand. Yeah. And then someone else puts the hand up, Alan, I need a hand. And you're jumping about from person to person. Someone has to wait, someone has to whatever, and it adds to the frustration. So that, to me, that is kind of online. It's not, also, it's not making my job any easier by any stretch of the imagination, because you're still helping them, you're still giving them the feedback, you're still working with the learners, but you've got, they've got so much resources to aid their learning now.
Well, it's an autonomous learner, and yeah, I was going to mention this before, but even more so now, but the interesting bit here is this is nothing new, but the technology has enabled this to take place easier. I remember visiting a colleague 6-7 years ago down at an outstanding sixth form in Birmingham, and he had this. They had a three-week lesson plan. So I'm like, three-week lesson plan? What do you mean? He's going, oh, well, I've got 10 different activities that students are working through at their own pace, depending on what they're comfortable with, what they're not comfortable with. And there was 10 boxes at the side of the room where they were getting resources, working through it. And a teacher was just sitting there, facilitating the room and filling in the gaps in learning, technology, understanding, which is absolutely key. And like you say, technology over the last kind of 6 or 7 years has really enabled that now to be part of online, you know, via Teams or whichever VLE people use. And that, see, because I guess my cynical view sometimes there's a perception that each of these things are different parts of the learning journey. Well, actually, it's all the same part of the learning journey. It's all holistic. And in the project-based assessment topic today is just another way, another part of that cog to support the learners to demonstrate their knowledge and understanding as well.
Of course it is. I mean, I think the thing about project-based learning as well, it's easier for the learners to shape their project around what they are interested in, what they want to do, because it's so big, there's so many moving parts in it, they can really take ownership of their project. So it becomes that the staff who took ownership of developing the project, then it's then up to the students to take ownership of delivering the project, you know. Yeah. And it has worked really well. Like we have had great success, and then it's nice when we have industry partners came in. We hold a seminar series, so we get industry professionals coming in to talk to the students. We had one on Monday, and it's quite a well-known film composer. It's a guy called Christian Henson, and he came in and he had written some stuff, or he writes a lot of music for film, TV and video games. And he took the students through a project that he's currently working on. And it was about time management, project management, problem solving, you know, as well as doing the actual thing itself. And it was great because we were able to just turn around and basically say, see all the stuff that we're asking you to do. Yeah. You're going to do this in the real world anyway, so you might as well start now. Which was, it's great for that. It's also that I always laugh that you can tell a student the same thing 100 times and they won't listen to you, and you got one person from outside to say it.
Context,
it's like instantly, it's like, all right, okay, I'll do it now.
No, I totally agree. I think that's fantastic. I totally agree with you. That's a kind of real world context and understanding. Like you said, helps them translate that into, all right, yeah, actually, so and so's in that job. He's told me I need it, therefore I need it. But no, I think that's kind of really powerful. Well, I think the bad news is, you know, we've now come to time, Alan, and we'll kind of talk all day on this. So what I'm going to ask you now, I kind of took this term from somebody earlier in the podcast. Often the term, well, what's a takeaway is? Well, actually, takeaway never feels you full. Whereas actually, what's a bit of nourishment? So if anyone's listening to this, what kind of point should we give that give a bit of nourishment that can take away and think, right, I'm going to build whatever I do on these two or three principles. So what do you think are the kind of key points to consider when anyone's kind of considering project-based learning or some of the wider things we've discussed this morning?
I mean, I think the kind of things to consider is you've got nothing to lose by starting the conversation, for sure. You know, especially if it's a framework or a qualification that's maybe been around for a while, you know, it could do with being refreshed. And sometimes what you find is when you start the conversation, the staff members have been thinking the same thing. Yeah. But it's just maybe not come together as much because it comes to that thing of we do it the same way every year. Well, let's not. I think it takes one person to say, well, let's try something different. Let's be brave. Let's try something new. And I do think for anybody that's listening who's been thinking about doing something, and it doesn't even need to be what we've discussed, Johnny, or the method. It could just be trying something different within a curriculum design and development. My thing would be just do it, like actually just do it, because you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. And the the engagement from the learners from our side has been excellent. The change in the PIs has been great, but that's an aside as to the learner journey has just been a lot more structured and a lot more realistic, I think.
Correct, because for me, the PIs are the output, the output of that enhancement. So not totally agree. Well, Alan, thank you very much for your time. Kind of really interesting as always, and kind of lots of key points there for listeners to consider. So thank you very much for joining us.
Johnny, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Thank you.